Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man, with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears kicking off your morning here. It is Wednesday, February the 14th, 2024, 14 minutes past the hour. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody out there. Today has started off great. The morning started with a free diet soda delivered to me. Does Valentine's Day get any better than this? Who says I don't like Valentine's Day? We've got a great show in store for you today, and we're going to kick it off with a great love story with a great twist ending and some last-minute plans if you don't know what to do for the big celebration today, Valentine's Day, with our friend, the Galloping Gourmet, Graham Kerr. This is Scott Spears, and as you can tell by the calendar, February the 14th has come. Happy Valentine's Day. And today we're joined by one of my favorite people, one of my favorite guests. It is always a pleasure when he drops by. You probably remember him best as the Galloping Gourmet, our friend Graham Kerr, who recently, last month, turned 90 years old. Graham, how are you?
Do you know, it is amazing to be able to report to you that I am doing really well.
Well, tell us what 90's like.
That's an interesting question, because it is clear. And we had a celebration in the community in which I live, and so about 100 people turned up with cards to wish me, and they all had the word 90 on them. I don't feel much different, but something's taken place in my life that turned my whole life upside down. So at 90, I'm actually facing a new life now.
So what?
Had I piqued your interest?
You certainly have. What has happened?
I remarried.
You got married?
I got married. Yes, remarried, yeah.
I remember, yeah.
Well, Trina and I had 60 long years. She died when she was 80. I looked after her for 23 years as her caregiver from a stroke and a heart attack, and you know that changed my whole way of life. If you cook in a way that causes people to have heart attacks, strokes, and diabetes, etc., you have a tendency to turn your life around when they have those things, and therefore make as much as you can for their life that you can. And that's what I had done. So 9 years ago, she passed. And in that 9 years, there was that big, gaping gulf of grief that opens up. I think I prefer to call it grief than self-pity, but it really feels about the same. And into that space comes all kinds of things, like a boat, and like my devotion from a God point of view, and looking to God to fill the space. I feel that God actually filled part of the space for me with a boat, and said, see the boat and as though it's transparent, and see me the other side of the boat, because this is my gift to you to help you to look after something in this way that you've looked after Trina. So this is a battered old boat that you have, and as you fix the boat up, it will be able to be a distraction from the grief for you. So that's what I had. So I began to really work after the boat. I then began to think about my faith in a different way, especially since my partner in all of that was gone. How did I feel about that one? And So I simply pursued what it was like to feel like you do think that you were going to match up once again the other side from a face point of view, and you rather live your life like that. So I had a next door neighbor who's very bright, very intelligent, very interesting person, and her husband had died 20 years ago. She's an abstract artist and spends all of her spare time doing these marvelous mural-type, extraordinary, interesting things. I would go in for tea on Fridays. How it started, neither of us know, but she invited me, I think, for tea, and I said, well, thank you, I would like to. So we sat on separate chairs for 2.5 years, looking at each other, sipping tea. She's a fabulous baker, so she would do good cakes and things like that, which I loved. And I would do my ordinary sandwiches, and she'd come to my place the next time. We had this marvelous relationship of being concerned for each other, but it was purely platonic. I didn't have any room for any romance or anything of that nature. And anyway, I was in my late ages, and you know, that tends to fade. All I can tell you very quickly is that we were having an argument. We had an argument every Friday, because she is very conservative, and I'm conservative progressive. I'm slash. I really do think that life can be better and that government is involved in that process. And she does not. And so we would have this constant, real, energetic discussion. But we would always leave with the fact that we respected each other. And in that respect, we learned to just take a little bit about what the opposition is saying and say, really, that does make sense. We became a kind of combined effort to try and make the world a better place. Well, we were discussing the great commandment which Jesus gave when he was being trapped into trying to number one commandment in 163 commandments that they had in the temple, Jewish temple at that time. And they're really out to get him and see whether they could trap him. And he gave the answer, just love God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And the second is similar to that, he added. And he wasn't asked for a second one, but he gave one. It is love your neighbor as you. Upon these two commandments depend all the law, all that 163, and all the prophets. In other words, right the way from Moses onwards, you guys, everything depends upon loving not only your God, but your neighbor and yourself. Now, I was logical argument with Nancy, her name is Nancy, about this issue, and I'd drawn up this sort of a symbol of a great cathedral and a little tiny building, and in the building was a neighbor, and in the cathedral was God echoing and all the rest of it, and all the hymns and all the lights and from the stained glass windows. Just the place reeks of power and majesty and awe, and this little outhouse is connected to this cathedral with a little walkway, and that's where the neighbor is, and that's where I live. Now, I happen to live next door to Nancy. That was a short walk, it is to go backwards and forwards, and we'd have about a 3-hour chat when we did. So I walk across with this sketch of what I was trying to get at, that love is the same. It doesn't change from God to neighbor. It's actually the same thing. And I'm trying to put that product. So I get up, I walk across, sit on the sofa where she's sitting. First time in 2.5 years. And I said, you see, it's the same. Loving God is the same as loving you. And I then kissed her. And she kissed me back. It was a wallop, actually. And I've got to tell you, as I fell off my horse, you know, if I was on a Damascus road trip, you know, like Paul was, and he knocked off his horse. I dropped off my horse that day. The whole business of making room for God, if I was really genuinely doing that, I would also make room for my neighbor. And, by the way, for myself. So that's what... Isn't that a long answer?
No, it's a perfect story for a Valentine. Now you're married. How did the marriage happen?
Well, it was... I cannot remember what happened next. I wasn't slapped. And all we can remember about that then is being absolutely taken aback by the kiss. She was not expecting it. I was not. It was kind of an ambush. And if anybody was ambushing us, it was God ambushing the two of us, because we were not in any way attracted to each other. Well, she says she was, but I sort of was. But not prepared to go there. That was just nowhere in either of our thoughts. So comes Thanksgiving, which is about a month later. I've invited her to join a family that I know recently here, and I was cooking the turkey. And so I invited her to be able to come along as well. And she said yes. So when we arrived at this place, something fell on the floor. I don't know what it was. But I bent down to be able to pick it up. It was under a table. And I couldn't reach from just bending down. And I thought to myself, this is not going to bode well, but I'm going to have to kneel down in order to get whatever it was. It was I don't know for sure but what it was, but it was important. So I went down on one knee, and in order to be able to shuffle under this table, I had to get an other knee down. And at that thought, I thought, now, when you're nearly 90, getting up from both knees on the ground is really not possible unless you've got something to help you up. And there was a table there, so I thought, okay, I'll risk it. So I got on, I got the piece of paper, and I then started to look up, and there was Nancy. She was standing right close to the table, within a couple of feet of the table. And there were other people who were preparing the meal. And I looked up at her from that kneeling position. And I said to her, would you consider spending the rest of your life with me? Would you be my wife? Now, honestly, my friend, I had no prior understanding of doing that. By this time, I had fallen head over heels in love with this woman. She'll kill me for this. She's 87, so it's not that either of us are chickens or look like chickens. You know, we don't. We look fairly young for our age, but that's it. So this was something way beyond that. And she looked down at me and said, yes. Just yes. And so then I had to get up. Oh, what a struggle that was. I remember, I've got to get... up to my feet and look lithe and young and like I'm worthwhile investing a year or two or however long we've got. But I got up, fortunately, and we had an embrace.
So Grant, and, you were at our house. Yeah. You were there for Thanksgiving, and when you went down, whenever you dropped or whatever was dropped, you had no intention to propose.
No.
Wow. That's a great story.
Thank you. I think it is a fabulous story, actually.
Now, Graham, when did you get married?
15th of December.
That quick. Now
when you're almost 90, my friend, you don't waste time.
Well, I think a question would be here, because, and I think it's interesting for a lot of people, when you are 90 and get married to somebody who's 87, is the relationship still platonic?
I think it can be. I do really think it's a different kind of relationship. For example, the one we had before all of this happened is based upon the word care. It doesn't say I love you. It says I care for you. And the word care spells out an acronym, which is C for concern, A for altruism, R for relationships, and E for enthusiasm. Now, those words out of the Oxford Dictionary, the first one is obviously is the C. Concern means to fill your mind with something. I'm concerned about me, is I constantly think about you. That's the first C. The A, the altruism, is a selfless devotion for the well-being of that person so that they, and here's the restoration, so that they can be returned to their original design intention. And the word enthusiasm comes from the word entheos, T-H-E-O-S, which means in God. I would say to her, my mind is filled with a selfless devotion for your well-being, so that you could be returned to your original design intention in God. Everything that you've ever wanted or thought you wanted, I want to be able to spend my time pondering that for you. That's a platonic relationship, which is a deep friendship, a real caring for another person. It doesn't involve the flesh, for example, as such. So I had that platonic relationship with her beforehand. I had grown over 2.5 years very interested in Nancy and Nancy's future, but I hadn't seen it as being connected romantically with mine. That was full up, I think, with both Trina and God. So here I am with a kiss, and the kiss changes everything. Because the way she kisses me back is a way that I have never been kissed back before. She kissed me with enthusiasm, literally. And it was a smacker. And I have to tell you that it really got my attention. And what it has revealed to me is, this is hard to say, I think I've been through my life, both from my parents and my wife and my friends. I think I've always been so preoccupied with doing what I do that I was never available enough to any of them to experience what it would be to understand that they loved me. I just didn't get what love could be like if it was just unabridged and completely devoted just to me, for not because of what I did, but for just exactly who I am. So I can say, think now with tolerable truth, that I never actually experienced what it was to be loved before Nancy. You could swear up and down that Trina and I had a great life together, and we really did. But I wasn't loved like this.
You know, Graham, that's interesting. And again, not to become too personal here, but I think it's a great service for people. And on Valentine's Day, it's the perfect time. People, the common wisdom would be anybody over 65, every relationship is platonic. So in your case, at 90 and 87, is this still a platonic relationship all around? Or is there something more involved? And again, not to be too personal here.
Right, I understand, and I would love to be able to explain this. Let's put it this way. If you were to go to an old house and inspect the old house and get an inspector to look over it, I think he would go around turning on all the taps and watching the drainage and everything else just to make sure the water works. That would be one of the tests that would be. And if the water wouldn't work, then they fix the plumbing. So the very obvious thing that you think of, first of all, which actually occurred to us as well, was, well, what about the plumbing? Now, the plumbing doesn't work as well as it worked when one was 30. That's an absolute statement. But there are other ways of getting water around the building and enjoying the fact that one has a water supply. Now, we are not at our age, unless I was visiting the biblical time of Abraham, I'm simply not equipped to be able to have children, and neither is she. So, what we do have, however, is an ability to kiss each other. That I had discovered right off the top. And the fact that she can say to me, I love you with all my heart and all my mind and all my body. I am simply in love with you. But she said that. And I have responded to that and initiated the same kind of things. And we can hold on to each other and feel this love communicate in a way that I had never before, and I had fully communicated in the past, in the flesh, obviously with the children. And this is utterly different and utterly and fully sufficient. There is no need to reproduce the reproduction facility when you have love flowing the way that we do. And I therefore feel that anybody remarrying at any age is going to go through a process of what I call making room for the other. And when you make room for the other, and the other fills that space, that's it, my friend. That's a relationship which is deeply romantic and doesn't have to follow all the fleshly rules. Mm.
So at 90 now, and being remarried, do you live together now?
We do. She moved from her apartment, which is right next door to mine, into mine. And in doing so, we found the need for changes. I mean, obviously, it's like having a pack of cards that you've never played with, and you strip the cellophane off the top, and you start dealing the cards off immediately. You would never do that in a fit. You'd shuffle those cards before you take a new pack of cards and use it. That's obvious. So us, her moving in with me was shuffling the cards of our lives. It's a wonderful metaphor, by the way, I think. And we found that there were five elements, that really five games that we would play, for which we absolutely had to have a shuffled bag. And if you like, I can name those five, and you could ask me about any one of them or all of them. I've got some swift answers.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, well, first of all, let's with me, it's fairly simple. She moves in, I cook. She's a good baker, but otherwise I'm the creative cook, if you will. So food is number one. I have a number of opinions about life. I like to think that I'm not opinionated, because people who are opinionated don't want to change and are rather unpleasant when they're forced into a situation where it may be demanded of them. So she comes with her opinions, which are largely conservative, and mine are largely progressive. So obviously, we have to make room somehow, as we had been for 2.5 years, for each other's opinions. Except when you move in with each other, you don't just visit once a week for 3 hours. You live 24/7 with each other, and an opinionated person can be a real pain in the rear end. Is that reasonable to say?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so we need to somehow make room for opinion. Then there's the stuff. I had all kinds of saucepans that I'd really treasure and have had for years. They're just wonderful. She had a stainless steel set, which she just loved. And I hate stainless steel things. You know, they stick like... Anyway, they stick. But she loves them. And I turned out my saucepans. And I'm cooking in these damn stainless steel things, you see. And I do that daily. And I have to scrub these things out because I cook at a high temperature to sear things. And they don't do that with stainless steel. Anyway. And then there's the elephants. Now, elephants are past relationships that I have had, including my wife, and that she has cooked, including her husband, where we just don't want to have to spend a lot of time talking about them. I had 18 pictures of Trina around my small apartment. They've all been packed up and sent out to my family. Every one of them. Well, there's just one left, but every one of them, because that other one is going very shortly. And because if you have to keep on looking at glowing pictures of a past relationship, that has something to do to your present relationship. And sometimes it's jealousy. I've been jealous of Nancy, and I've told her that. And she has been jealous of me. It's a perfectly real relationship. So what we did, we said, if we invite into our conversation stories of our past relationships, the chances are we're inviting an elephant into our living room. And elephants in a living room have a tendency to crap. And we just had the carpet cleaned, and we don't want that kind of relationship. So we tied their name on their tails, and we offered the front door to our relationships, where we have four of them that have this shadowing effect. And we invited them to go graze somewhere else, but we didn't want them around our house. And so we have more or less kept to that wonderfully. We invite an elephant in occasionally to be able to have a serious discussion about something that's on our mind. But immediately we've done that, we offer them the door. And then there's the final thing, which is scheduling. I'm a very, very disciplined person. I get up at exactly the same time. I do exactly the same routine. I get a lot fulfilled. I've written 32 books and done 1,800 television shows and about 2,000 radio programs and all kinds of other things in my life. And I'm still at it. I still keep a detailed journal. Everything about my life is split second, and I love it. Everything about Nancy is open, and she paints and when she paints, she's receiving something, and it doesn't matter if it's lunchtime, it doesn't matter what's going on. She is just pouring herself into that work. And I understand that. And she's been doing that for 20 years. And here's this idiot next to me, here's this defined character next door who's split-seconding his whole day, and she is going to fit into that? How is that going to work? And it has worked triumphantly, because we realized that we had fixed times and flexible times, and we had to work out what was what for each other's sake. We were making room for each other. It is a wonderful way of saying, I love you. To make sure that she has 6 hours every day when it's Nancy's choice about what she does. I've given her that space, and she's given me 5.5 hours. And the extra half hour that I spend, I don't have a choice because I'm cooking. So that's the difference. So there you are. That's 5 of the things where we've had to make room for each other.
You know, Graham, these are very good lessons. Now, with Valentine's Day coming up, actually today, tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this. Now, this is your first Valentine's Day being remarried.
Yes.
And in your first Valentine's Day at 90, what will you be doing?
Yeah. Well, I bought flowers, first of all. So that's a done deal. I've also bought a Valentine's card, one funny one. Which is a banana hugging another banana, saying, I love you a whole bunch, which I thought was funny. And the other one is a very beautiful card, and it's blank. So I'm going to fill in the 5 issues that we've talked about but haven't done that fit into... what I've just cut into the food, into opinions, into stuff and elephants and schedule. I'm going to write out carefully the commitment that I am making to her in the next year to be able to be fully cognizant, fully aware of what it is going to cost to make room for her in my life.
Now, Graham, for all of us who want to be creative tomorrow for our loved ones, what would be a good meal or a good beverage or both to prepare for somebody, our loved one, for Valentine's Day?
Okay. Well, let's say for the sake of example, and I'm going to put it in 2 categories because this is a drink category that I'm going to suggest here. So whatever you're choosing to eat, that gets too complicated, but the drink is manageable. So if you're a wine drinker, it doesn't matter whether you're a wine drinker of red wine or white wine, whether it's sweet or dry, it doesn't really matter. If you're a wine drinker, you prepare this drink by filling half the glass, let's rephrase that, about a third of the glass, about 2 or 3 ounces of wine. Then you take the Schweppes tonic water, which the one when there's no soda, no sugar added. So it's a very refreshing, bubbly, gaseous, substance, and it's completely otherwise flavorless. It's just sparkling water with this quinine and aspartame, a Splenda, added from a sugar flavor. It's really, really, really good just to drink on its own. So you then top this glass up to at least twice. I'm fiddling with this because I haven't measured it as such. but I would have 4 ounces of the tonic to 2 ounces of the wine. And it would fill a wine glass reasonably full. Then you drink, that's a spritzer. It's called a spritzer. So it's now carbonated, it's now bubbling, it's now like a kind of champagne, if you will. It's got that texture on the toast. That is, that's a very interesting, refreshing, pleasant drink. I mean, everybody loves that. It is good. And some wines that is a bit raw, they tend to take on this new, ebullient life, you know, with the bubbles that are done. It's really a wonderful experience. Now, I would take just the Schweppes, and I would add to that, if I was a non-drinker, some Angostura bitters, A-N-G-O-S-T-U-R-A, Angostura. So it's in the supermarket where all the setups are with lime juices and that sort of thing that are added to cocktails and that sort of thing. That's where you find it. It is made from peppers, and it's a very old recipe. It's really extraordinary, and it's extremely bitter and very deeply red. So you put a few drops of this, actually I'm going to say a shake, so several drops of this in the bottom of the glass. And then you pour on the chilled tonic water on the top. You can put ice if you will. And if you really want to go show a little fresh mint and a slice of lime that has been squeezed just a little bit so as to get the lime juice also into this. That's called a Janine, J-A-N-I-N-E. And it's an invention of mine for a friend who used to work in television with me, called Janine. And it is wonderful, a wonderful drink. And actually people who do drink and don't drink can drink it together without feeling somehow left out. So I think just for the two, if you're romantic and a little wine helps, the first one, but if you're a little romantic and a little wine hurts, then the other, the Janine, would be wonderful. There you go.
Now, for the main course, what would you want to prepare?
Well, for me, nowadays, I would splurge a little bit. So I'm going to cook fish, and I'm going to have some ranch dressing and some sauce tartare, which is usually around the seafood department of a supermarket, T-A-R-T-A-R-E. It's a combination of pickled vegetables in a mayonnaise-based sauce. The ranch dressing, which is the light one, is a less risky salad dressing and can be used to thin down the sauce tartare, which is really thick, so that it's a pourable consistency. And then I will cook a 1-inch thick fillet of fish. I personally prefer line-caught salmon, but if that isn't available, then it's going to be Chilean sea bass or, I must be 90. halibut. But I want a good 1-inch thick. And I'm going to cook that for 8 minutes. It's going to be 6 minutes on one side in a baking situation, and it's going to be at 400 degrees. And it's going to be warm through. You don't have to cook fish to make it tender. You cook it to change its protein substance in a way so as to make it attractive to the person who's eating it. So I would serve a 6-ounce piece of beautiful fish, and I would bathe it in that ranch and tartar sauce, which is so easy to just simply combine the two so that it's pourable, and pour that over the top. It looks wonderful. If there was a little fresh dill available at the supermarket, I'd chop some fresh dill and sprinkle a little smoked paprika over the top of that. And it would look wonderful. Okay.
Now, Graham, whether your plumbing is working or not, what do we have for dessert?
Thank you for putting it that way. I have one dessert left in my life, and this is something which I've had to adjust making room, because Nancy enjoys it, but she's kind of, that's okay, but do you have to eat it for 20 years, literally, as your dessert every night? Which is what I've done. I invented it for Trina and myself, and we just love it. It's oats, which are cooked in the morning for breakfast as oatmeal. And to that, we add dried fruits, a whole range of dried fruits of cranberries and raisins and sultanas and currants and dried cherries. And we keep on going, with as many berry fruits as we can get that we can dry. And we stir that in, and it turns the porridge purple beautifully. I then put a slug of hazelnut creamer into that, which is wonderful. And there it is. And we have a little yogurt on the top of it and eat away. And I've done that for 20 years, and I've always done enough so that I have enough, a small amount, which is going to be chilled over the day, and have fresh yogurt and a Metamucil chocolate biscuit added. Metamucil is for people who are constipated. Now we're back to the plumbing again.
Now we're back to the plumbing.
Right. And that has a tendency to perk up later in life. But Metamucil do these chocolate wafer biscuits, which are delicious. And they're stuff full of Metamucil, which is a wonderful fiber. And seems to deal with constipation perfectly. So I break up one of those over the top of the yogurt whipped up with the dried fruits and just a tablespoonful of chopped nuts in it as well. And it is ice cold and just marvelous. So there you go. That's what I would have. In fact, I'll tell you what. I will have that.
There you go. Graham, with about 2 minutes left here, on your 90th Valentine's Day, remarried and in love for the first time in your life, receiving love, as you say, what can you tell us on this Valentine's Day about love? Whether you're 20 or 40 or 60 or 90, what do you know about love?
It is the essential is a nasty word, first of all. It's called relinquishment. The second word, which is a better one, which is the same thing, is make room. Making room. If you love somebody, you lay part of your life down for them. And sometimes it's a part of your life that you really, really, really like. And a way of knowing how much you love is really feeling that making room as something that is giving you an immense amount of pleasure, of actually giving something away. And I've done that with my wardrobe, and I have thrown food and in order to make room for Nancy's clothes. And I have jackets and things that I dearly love and that actually look quite nice on me. And they have gone because I can't have her in their space without that. Now, I've learned in doing this changeover in the last 2 months that I have relinquished and relinquished and relinquished. And when I write my Valentine's card, I'm going to be talking about ongoing relinquishment. I'm sorry if it sounds as if it's just un-American and un-consumer. I have got to become less so that she can become more.
You know, Graham, I think what we've learned here is at any age, no matter what age the two people are, if there's love there, it's a good thing. And what a good lesson to learn on Valentine's Day. Graham, I love these interviews. They always go by so fast. I'm sure we will do more of them. But congratulations to you on your nuptials, on your marriage. Congratulations on everything going on. Turning 90, that certainly is no small feat. And to many more interviews and to lots of fun to come in the future. Happy Valentine's Day.
I would like to thank you to be open enough in your life with so many things happening all the time for such a simple and credible thing as how do I love more and what is it like to be loved? Doug, you really do offer people like me a very unique space to be able to talk my mind and heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Graham. Happy Valentine's Day.
You too, my friend. God bless you. Right. Bye-bye.
The Galloping Gourmet himself, Graham Kerr, married at...
You're listening to The Talking Place. The legendary star of The Facts of Life, Charlotte Ray, Mrs. Garrett.
How much of Mrs. Garrett is in Charlotte Ray?
I'm not, you know, they made Mrs. Garrett perfect, which was ridiculous.